Any team that's tested AI tools for data has seen the pattern already. AI gives a different number than your BI tool. Metrics don't match across teams. And inevitably, users lose trust. It turns out, turning on AI is easy, but making it work on data is not. Hex AI was built to solve this. The key is nailing context. Hex is built to unify and curate your data context for agents. Data teams can observe, govern, and continuously improve every AI answer, so answers get smarter the more your team asks. The result? Your entire organization asks data questions in natural language and trusts the answers. Not because the AI got lucky, because it knows your business and its data. Because that's what an AI analytics platform should do. Join data teams from Cursor, Lovable, Ramp, AWS, and over 2,000 more at hex.ai.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age appropriate.
And safe, made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
This week on Lunchbox Envy, the average American eats about 23 pounds of it every single year.
Ben and Jerry's employees are allowed to take home 3 free pints of it every day.
And the Library of Congress has an 18-step recipe for it, written by none other than Thomas Jefferson.
This week, it's ice cream! Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Jack and I'm here with my fellow QI elf Manu. Hey Manu.
Hey Jack. We are also joined by food writer and chef Rosie McKean.
Hello. We're getting icy with it.
I see what you did there.
I'm so sorry. I was thinking of jiggy with it. Anyway, ice cream week.
Did you guys know ice cream is technically a foam?
A what?
I know. In my head, foam is like in a mattress.
That's or true.
It's not in the freezer. I think that's amazing.
Did you ever have baths when you were a kid? And there was that really amazing like bath foam that you could buy that was basically in like a squirty cream canister.
Wow.
Whoa.
Maybe you should have a bath with some ice cream.
Soft serve. So firstly, what we're talking about here, we should clarify, because people always ask, what's the difference between ice cream and gelato?
I'm so glad you asked that, Jack. I'm here to tell you. Ice cream, typical ice cream, is made with a high cream content and at least 10% milk fat. It's churned at a fast speed to incorporate air, making it light and creamy. Okay? That's clear?
I'm with you.
Gelato, as we know it, the Italian ice cream variety, has less air and it has a lower fat content, which is actually surprising.
Wait, gelato is less fatty.
Yeah.
But it's so much tastier.
It feels
tastier,
more decadent, doesn't it?
Right.
Maybe it's just the name.
Well, it's churned way slower, firstly.
Okay.
So it doesn't incorporate the air that you get in from a high speed churning of an ice cream. It also uses more milk and less cream, results in a kind of somehow denser, silkier texture.
Okay. Yeah. And sorbets, they're just a completely different thing, right?
Well, the shit one. Sorry, sorry.
Oh,
wow.
Coming out.
Shots fired.
Sorbet.
No. Sorbet, it's difficult, right? Because when I was looking sorbets up, like all the definitions are like, it's made from fruit. And that's just not true. Like you can find all kinds of different sorbets that are not made from fruit. It typically doesn't contain dairy. Some would argue that one of the benefits of sorbet is that it has a cleaner taste because you don't have that dairy interruption in your palate, you know, coating the back of your tongue. So if you really want something very, very concentrated, a sorbet is a good option.
Mm.
Is that helpful, everyone, please?
Very much.
Love it.
Oh, yeah, good. Okay. I'll take a job, please, Mr. Walls.
No, he was originally a butcher.
Oh, is that why Walls do sausages?
Oh, my God, probably, yeah.
It must be.
Wow.
I always wondered whether he started out as a butcher who did ice creams on the side or an ice cream maker who did sausages on the side and whether he's ever combined them.
Ooh. What a classical definition of a multi-hyphenate.
You know what is really cool about ice cream is it's a solid, a liquid, and a gas all at the same time.
What? Incredible. You can bank that for your pub quizzes, ladies and gents.
Absolutely love it. So the solid bit is ice crystals.
Okay, I'm with you.
They form when it gets ice cold. It still contains unfrozen liquids, and this is mainly in the form of fats and sugars that don't freeze completely.
Okay.
And then, yeah, you have all of the gas in the ice cream, say, like when you're whipping it up. So, yeah, it gives it that nice light texture. So it's not like a solid block of ice.
Yes, because I read about overrun. Are you going to talk about overrun? Mm. That's the air within ice cream, which is vital. Like, it's not just a cheap filler ingredient. And the way you work it out is it's simply the increase in volume. So if you start with a litre of cream and it becomes 1.5 litres of ice cream after it's churned, that's because you've increased the volume by 50%. So its overrun will be 50%. And you can actually compare the percentage of overrun to different brands, a bit like the percentage of alcohol in beers and wines and spirits. So Häagen-Dazs vanilla has 31% overrun, whereas gelato typically has 20 to 25%. And some cheaper ice creams have over 100% overrun. They're basically more than half air.
That's mad.
Which makes it much cheaper. But I think legally you can't call it ice cream.
Have you ever noticed that if you pick up a punnet of low-fat ice cream, they're also like 100% less heavy than the other ones because there's clearly like so much more air in them, because that's a great way of reducing those calories. It's just to eat some nice air.
Also costs, like in America, apparently if it's 50% air, you can't legally call it ice cream.
What?
So you get all sorts of things that, like, kind of you're doing a euphemistic way around. It's going to be like dairy dessert or like milk delight, frozen milk delight.
Maybe that's why you get gassy after you eat it, Manu.
It's not your lactose allergy.
I am eating loads of air.
Sorry, we started this episode with me saying I apologize for all of the farts I am about to do. It's great. Great start to the show.
Okay, should we crack on? Okay, let's dig into our first lunchbox. That's you, Manny.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Oh, no. You sound really, really
You know, I'm
dastardly.
Actually quite pleased with myself.
Okay.
So I have two pretty funky historical ice cream flavors I have recreated for you.
My heart sinks at the word historical.
So did you make them yourself?
Yes, I did. last night. So we have.
Oh, well, okay.
Oh, my God.
I know.
One of them looks just like what I'd expect from an ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
One of them looks like a bodily fluid.
Yes, it does.
Maybe from a man.
Oh, wow. There is something wrong with your man.
Good for freezing, though.
That is true. Okay, so we have two flavors here. Let's start with the one that actually looks more ice creamy.
I'm gonna dig in.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, nice texture.
Okay.
That is fantastic.
Oh my God, it's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it tastes almost like cake.
I think I know what it is. Is it brown bread?
It is brown bread.
Oh,
that's amazing.
Do you like it?
It's delicious.
Mm. Nice. I think this is a nice recipe because it's a way to use up stale bread. You know how like you make breadcrumbs? So you make a load of breadcrumbs from toasted stale bread, and then you add loads of double cream. This is a no churn, so lots of condensed milk.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. There's maple syrup. There's honey in it. So then you mix that all together and whack it in the freezer for
that's
at least
great.
6 hours.
It tastes a bit like Weetabix as well to me.
Great point. Oh my God.
Do you not think it's very toasty flavor?
I reckon Weetabix should get on that.
It does, you know.
Weetabix ice cream. You heard it here first.
But the reason I made this was because this is actually inspired by one of the first foodie facts I can remember. So when I was in primary school, I went on a school trip to Apsley House in Piccadilly, and they had an ice cream pail that belonged to the Duke of Wellington.
Oh, wow.
And the thing I remember is the tour guide saying, And back in those days, they used to eat bread ice cream. And I was like, you fucking what?
Man, it was a very sweary 8-year-old.
I was. But yeah, it was a really popular Georgian ice cream flavor. The way it was made in that period is really interesting because obviously this is a time before freezers and refrigeration. So you had things called ice houses, which took quite a lot of space and like a lot of money to transport big chunks of ice from the sea or rivers over to your property. So ice cream at that period is really a thing that rich people enjoyed.
What is the principle behind an ice house? Like, the block of ice chills the room. Is that the theory? Or are they storing things literally in the ice?
So it's a room for the ice. And the ice is the main product of the room. So it's like a kind of mini igloo thing that you bury deep in the ground. So it's already cool.
Okay.
And then you make sure that all of the kind of seals in the room and all the doors and stuff are like super, super tight. So warm air can't get in. They were actually incredibly efficient. So ice could last in an ice house for over a year.
Oh, wow. So it's basically just a very insulated room. But we had one opposite us. So I grew up opposite a park and they had an ice house in the park. And you could go down. They would open it once a month. And it was underneath the hill. There was a hill in the park. And then you go down. And even without the ice, it was cool because it never had the heat of the sun.
Mm-hmm. That's super cool. And then the way that they made ice cream, so what you do is you'd have a kind of ice cream pail, like a bucket, and that went inside another bucket surrounded by crushed up ice from your ice store. And then you added loads of salt and that created a chemical reaction that plummeted the temperature even further down. So it could create temperatures of minus 25 degrees centigrade. And the modern freezer is only about like minus 18. So it's even colder. And then you just like had a little churn and you churned your ice cream in the super, super cold bucket. And you could make a decent amount of ice cream in about 45 minutes, which is pretty cool. So yeah, they used to make all sorts of flavors. There's quite a few in an early recipe. One of, I think, the earliest recipe for ice cream in the UK, which was written in the 1660s by a woman called Lady Anne Fanshawe for icy cream. That's what it used to be called back then.
Clever.
Fanshawe's like icy cream.
Loads of flavors, which included tamarind, rosemary, artichoke, cucumber, parmesan, which is very cool. They were mad for it in Georgia and England. One thing I do love about the Fanshawe recipe is that she forgets to include the salt, so it wouldn't have worked.
Oh, no.
Let's just ignore that bit.
Sounding an awful lot like Mrs. B, Mrs. Beaton.
Faking
her way.
Friend of the podcast.
It's still pretty expensive to make. Still only rich people are eating it. And then there are a few developments in the Victorian period, which made ice cream a lot more accessible. One is that they started transporting enormous amounts of ice to like commercial ice houses. So ice became more widely available. And then a woman called Nancy M. Johnson, she patented a artificial freezer in the 1840s, which kind of improved on the churning method. So she basically just added a lid and a hand crank.
And people have been making ice cream for 100 years and been like, what's going wrong? It's all spilling over the sides. I just can't work it out.
So she was like, hold on, guys.
I don't mean to diminish women.
No, but it's fine. Just a woman doing a cool... No, but she was amazing. We don't know loads about her apart from she was American and was married to an inventor.
Lids.
Loved a lid. The Georgian contraptions were called sorbetiers. Which sounds beautiful, but I watched a really fun video from the English Heritage YouTube channel, and they do not look as sexy as they sound. It's literally just a bucket in a bucket and a wooden handle, but do watch it. It's lots of fun.
So following on from Nancy Johnson, we have Agnes Marshall, who takes the baton for ice cream development and being cutting edge. Born in 1852 in Haggerston, actually, not far from where we record. I honestly think she's a time traveler because her sketchy ideas about where she was born. She died in 1905. She basically arrived on the scene and had all these innovative ideas about ice cream. She came up with the idea of using liquid nitrogen, even though it wasn't like no one had made liquid nitrogen, or at least it was very expensive. It wasn't around. And she thought, oh, I bet that would be the perfect thing for ice cream. She wrote a book called The Book of Ices, and it basically described innovative ways of making ice cream into interesting shapes. So she'd make ice cream molds that were like bunches of grapes or a rabbit, and she was using interesting flavors. I think she was the inventor of the ice cream cone, because she has a recipe in her 1885 book, A.B. Marshall's Book of Cookery, which includes you make a pastry and you curl it around and then you dry it out and then you eat ice cream out of it. Before Agnes Marshall popularized ice creams, people would buy a metal stick with something frozen to it and they'd lick it all off the metal stick and then have to hand it back in. That's the way we ate ice creams.
Nice.
Before the cone.
Gross.
Yeah, I think she was an amazing woman. She did all of this before she was 35.
What?
Her first book, The Book of Ices, was such a success. She went on tour around the country and was like basically cooking on stage. She was one of the first celebrity chefs.
And
go on.
Really hot.
And also, yeah, I looked her up and her Wikipedia picture, which is basically the only image we have of her as a young woman, is she's quite a looker.
She's smoking, man. Do Google her.
You don't really get that said about many Victorian people, so.
I mean, back in the day, Queen Victoria was quite hot.
Yeah.
Sure.
Albert famously
hot.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not talk about this. Anyway, yeah.
But the reason I think she was a time traveler is because she just wrote prolifically about the poor quality of food on trains. Like, that's, you know, that feels quite contemporary to us. And she predicted all sorts of things, like refrigerated lorries delivering fresh food nationwide, that large shops would put small shops out of business. And she was like an early adopter of technologies like the dishwasher and automatic doors. I mean, I think she died before automatic doors were a thing, but
she would have loved them.
No, she predicted them, and I think she might have just been transported from the 2020s back to the
Lots of women coming up in ice cream. Love to hear it. One prolific woman has rumored links to ice cream. Can we talk about Margaret Thatcher and Mr. Withy?
Well, she was a chemist, wasn't she? She was on the team that developed soft serve ice cream, actually, but she herself probably wasn't like the sole inventor, but she was definitely a chemist. Yeah.
Wow. Why couldn't she have just stayed doing that?
The lady's not for churning.
Oh god.
Wow. In the Victorian era, ice cream was insanely popular, so much so that to keep up with the demand and to kind of boost profits, people were making a lot of pretty dodge ice cream flavors.
Uh-oh. Oh, God.
Is that what you brought as your second ice cream?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
Would you like to guess what it is?
Okay, I've got my spoon.
Okay, yeah, I'll try it.
Let's dig in.
Oh! No, you didn't.
Oh, my God. Oh! It tastes of cauliflower.
What the hell is it?
It's turnip.
Oh, gross.
I know.
People
used to just whiz up turnip, freeze it, and pass it off as ice cream.
Gross.
You're welcome.
I can have some more of that bread one.
Yeah.
During World War II, ice cream became scarce due to wartime rationing. So the government promoted carrots on a stick as a substitute.
Nice.
So tragic.
That's the most British thing I've ever heard. Here, we have nothing nice to give you, so have a carrot on a stick.
Any team that's tested AI tools for data has seen the pattern already. AI gives a different number than your BI tool. Metrics don't match across teams. And inevitably, users lose trust. It turns out, turning on AI is easy, but making it work on data is not. Hex AI was built to solve this. The key is nailing context. Hex is built to unify and curate your data context for agents. Data teams can observe, govern, and continuously improve every AI answer, so answers get smarter the more your team asks. The result? Your entire organization asks data questions in natural language and trusts the answers. Not because the AI got lucky, because it knows your business and its data. Because that's what an AI analytics platform should do. Join data teams from Cursor, Lovable, Ramp, AWS, and over 2,000 more at hex.ai.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age-appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
Okay, let's move on to our second lunchbox, and that's yours, Rosie. What have you brought?
Okay, I haven't made anything, sorry. But what I have done is brought you two classic examples of ice cream.
I'm relieved you haven't made anything when the things being made are mangled turnip.
So high. What are you talking about?
We have got two different types of ice cream. And one of them, a very, very familiar one. It is, of course, vanilla ice cream. Nice. And then this is just ice cream, plain ice cream. I think what I wanted to sort of first talk about was the fact that most people, particularly in the UK, but I think globally, view ice cream as being quintessentially vanilla flavored. Like a plain ice cream is vanilla, when actually vanilla is an infusion into the ice cream. It's a spice. It's a very distinctive flavor. Yes, it's absolutely synonymous with ice cream, but it isn't plain. This is plain. Mm-hmm. So it is literally a frozen custard. We will talk about what goes into ice cream when we've tried it.
Oh, this is the best episode ever. Okay, so I've actually brought, in preparation for this, a gold spoon.
What?
It was gifted to me for Christmas about 10 years ago.
Wow. What a very nice
that
gift.
Is taking silver spoon to a special.
Well, I wasn't born with it in my mouth. I worked very hard in order to earn money to pay for it. Basically, I heard on the radio once, it was the kitchen cabinet actually, and they had a materials expert, Zoe Laughlin, and she explained that whenever you eat with cutlery, you swallow about 1 billion atoms of whatever the thing is made of, the spoon, and you are tasting the steel, or stainless steel is the most common thing where you make spoons from, but you just get used to it, so you don't really notice. And I don't know if you've ever had ice cream off a plastic spoon or a wooden spoon, and it does taste slightly different. Anyway, she did an experiment with tomato soup and she served it with stainless steel as a control. And then she let the panel try it with a copper spoon. And they were all like, oh, it tasted so metallic to them because the acid reacted with the copper. And then she gave them a gold spoon and they all unanimously agreed that it was just delicious and fantastic. The gold is good for this because it's very unreactive, which is why it doesn't taste of metal in your mouth. And it's also much more thermally conductive. So it warms up to temperature quicker in your mouth. But yeah, so you haven't lived until you've eaten up a gold spoon.
Okay, cool. Shall we try? Who's going to eat off that one spoon first?
You should be the golden spoon lady.
All right, well, everyone dig in. It's just like sugary and milky.
It's delicious.
And soft. Let's try the vanilla.
I can see the black fleck.
Yeah. It's a hard job, ours, just sitting here eating ice cream.
Oh, you can really tell. And you can taste the spice so much more when you just compare it to milk. And it's used as well, you'd say, like the vanilla version of a software or vanilla, you know, sex. is not the sort of basic plain version.
But I think there's an argument to say that the British palate, for example, has really become conditioned to think of vanilla as the flavor of dairy rather than the actual flavor of dairy, which is in that.
Not just the flavor of dairy, but to associate it with sweetness.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Apparently in Cambodia, they cook curries with vanilla.
Ooh.
So if you give someone in Cambodia like the vanilla smell, they'll recognize it as a savory thing rather than just a sweet thing.
That is mad.
Okay, so let's talk a bit about how you make vanilla ice cream. what you have to do is you have to make a custard. Typically, this is how you make an ice cream. Milk, cream, eggs, and sugar. Egg yolks, to be specific. And you heat the eggs, sugar, milk, and cream together. Egg yolks coagulate. It becomes a cooked custard. What you can do to add flavor to ice creams is that you can infuse the fats with different things. Okay. In this case, vanilla. Because it is a pod filled with tiny, tiny seeds, the seeds leach into the cream. Mm. They're so tiny that they can't be sieved out. They stay in there. They look beautiful. We love it. We love to see it. It's premium as hell. But there are literally thousands of other things you can infuse ice cream with. When I worked in a restaurant, I would make the ice creams on the pastry section. It was my fave job because I was kind of given a bit of free rein. As long as the ice cream tasted good at the end, I was allowed to sort of play around and tinker with stuff.
Wow, that sounds so much fun.
Yeah. And so one of my favorite ones I ever did was a salted almond one where I like deeply toasted a load of almonds, shoved them in the milk and cream, heated that, infused it. So infusion is typically achieved in a hot liquid. Mm. You can do cold infusions. They just take longer, but they're also very, very good. And they often create a more clean texture because they don't change the composition of the fat because you're not heating it.
Mm, it's just like hot coffee and cold brew coffee.
Kind of, exactly. Okay. So yeah, that's the sort of simplest way of making ice cream without adding any kind of like bits or different textures, like, you know, solids like chocolate or cocoa or
pieces of cookie dough.
That's something you have to do
after
okay. Because if you churn something with something else in, it just becomes,
it'll get all mushed up, yeah
completely whipped within it,
those little chocolate fish.
When you make ice cream at home, you usually use just caster sugar, right? But actually, when we made them in the restaurant, we would use something which is called an inverted sugar. Invert sugars delays ice crystal formation.
Mm.
You know, sometimes you make homemade ice cream and it can be really like crystalline.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would say very well done, Manu. Today your ice cream was super
smooth. I think the bread was just confusing you because
But you used inverted sugars because you use condensed milk, which is technically an inverted sugar, which is why you so often see it in like ice cream recipes, no churn ice cream recipes. And you use honey, didn't you? And maple syrup, all inverted sugars.
No way. That's
so basically, if you see ice cream recipes where it's like, use glucose, don't like put your nose up at it. It's actually really helpful. It's like a really good way of making good ice cream.
Mm.
The other thing that inverted sugars do, which is why I'm just talking incessantly about them, is they make the freezing temperature higher. So it's easier to scoop.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, interestingly, in restaurants, you would have a specific ice cream freezer that is set to a slightly higher temperature your commercial.
That is next level.
That is the ultimate dream now. Because originally it was like, maybe a wine fridge, maybe a beer fridge. And now I'm like, I want just the ice cream freezer.
There is one other way to make smooth ice cream without using inverted sugars. It is with alcohol. So very often in sorbets, for example, you will see that the ingredients might call for vodka.
Mm.
Vodka is typically used in these cases because it is completely flavorless when it's frozen. Mm-hmm. Almost flavorless. Mm-hmm. If you had some frozen vodka, it's actually pretty tasty.
It is.
Especially after the sixth one.
Yeah. But the difficulty with alcohol is obviously it means that your ice cream is therefore contains alcohol. For some people, that's not okay. And it doesn't really solve the ice crystal problem as well as inverted sugars does.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's just a little bit of nerdy know-how about ice creams.
The whole time I was thinking you just put the sugar upside down somehow.
It does sound like that.
How hard are you working to like flip all of these tiny things? Anyway.
I was thinking of introvert sugar.
It
just sits in the corner at parties.
So I don't know if you remember in our milk episode, we spoke about the buffalo farm close to where our parents live.
Oh my God, Manu, you didn't.
I did.
Oh!
The Buffalicious Farm Amaretto Buffalo Ice Cream.
Amaretto flavor.
Yeah, I want to know what you think of the texture.
Oh, it's quite strong. Creamy buffalo flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Oh, I like it.
I like it a lot.
It's thicker than your average. God, this is somehow ended up being quite a rude episode. No one thought
they
would.
They all end up being rude.
Everyone thought it was going to be very vanilla.
Hey. So, time for our third lunchbox, and that's mine. I have brought. Have you ever been to space?
No, just not recently.
I've brought freeze-dried ice cream. So it's always marketed as being the ice cream that astronauts eat. And you often see astronauts on the packaging. You see it in the Science Museum for sale. But I never actually took it to space. So it was developed for the Mercury program in the 60s. But the tests on the astronauts, I don't want to put you off.
It looks like someone's tried to make a Neapolitan chocolate biscuit bar. The ice cream has decreased in volume so much that it's like tiny.
It doesn't
bar.
Like just add water.
Yes. Or it could be a bath bomb.
It makes such an incredible sound.
Yeah, it's very like crackly. When you crumble, should I bring it to the mic?
Ooh. You can hear how dry that is.
Yeah, it's completely dry. It's been freeze dried. Mm-hmm. So freeze drying is a technology that's been around for decades before the space race. The process is technically called lyophilization, and it was used in World War II to preserve medical supplies like blood plasma, and it's actually used to make instant coffee.
Oh, that's so clever. Misleading use of the word freeze. Is it frozen?
Well, basically freeze drying is the process of putting something in a vacuum chamber, lowering the pressure so much that it cools down to the point where all the water sublimates into gas and gets whipped away. Sublimation is the same thing, actually, incidentally, that causes dry ice because it's solid. When it's exposed to the air, it just turns straight into gas and it makes a lovely smoky effect.
Disco's all my life, my favourite thing, a bit of dry ice.
So in the 1960s, a company called the Whirlpool Corporation developed freeze-dried ice cream for NASA because ice cream is quite unattractive, unappealing thing to have in space because the melting ice globules can get everywhere and you basically want to avoid liquids as far as possible. Unfortunately, test subjects on Earth said it was disgusting.
Oh no.
And much more like a building material than a food. So it actually never went to space. And later on in the 70s, actual ice cream was served in Skylab and the ISS. I think they sucked it out of pouches like a Capri Sun.
Oh, that's clever.
But yeah. It also defeats the purpose of ice cream. Like the joy of eating it with a spoon and the melting is the...
Yeah, I think, and that's probably the reason people didn't like this stuff, because the freeze-dried ice cream texturally is nothing like ice cream. Mm.
Okay. All right, can we try it?
Yeah, let's go for it. Dig in.
Okay, I'm going to take... Ooh.
What do we think?
I mean, it's not my favorite thing I've ever eaten. No, but it's not bad bite. Mm. Like it's fine. It kind of reminds me of... You know those biscuits, those pink wafers that we used to eat at parties?
Oh, I love those.
Those are obviously infinitely better than this, but that's what the flavour reminds me of.
What is really interesting is that even though technically it is a type of ice cream, there's no joy in it compared to normal ice cream.
I know what you mean.
So I think one of the reasons why this is like, it's fine. It's sugary, which is nice. But part of the reason... we all love ice cream so much is that kind of temperature and textural change. People have dubbed it the ice cream effect.
Oh,
So it's having something that's like really cold, really stimulating, but then also changes texture in your mouth. So we like chocolate for the same reason, because it goes from the solid to the like melty chocolate in the mouth. A QI favorite, a food scientist called Charles Spence.
Oh, yeah.
Who wrote a really good book called Gastrophysics. He's actually helped us out with some facts on the show before. Lovely, lovely man. He's been looking into how ice cream can help encourage elderly people to eat more, because it's a big problem in, say, care homes and amongst the elderly, where you lose a lot of your taste buds and a lot of like the joy of food kind of goes. So there's a lot of malnutrition. So older people just losing interest in eating. Basically, if you kind of ice creamify food, it can put the joy back into eating by creating that kind of temperature and textural difference. Even if you can't taste as much, you will still hopefully enjoy the food you're eating.
Did you know that the inventor of Ben and Jerry's has anosmia?
Anosmia, yeah.
So he can't smell, or his sense of smell is greatly reduced. So the reason why he likes to have loads of chunky texture in his ice cream is because it actually, there's more going on in his mouth than just a pure, like, creamy palate.
Okay, yeah. Was that Ben or Jerry?
Ben. It was Ben.
Good.
But yeah, so just going back to Charles Spencer's ice cream. So some of the flavors they're looking at creating, a lot of them are savory because you want to get like more protein, lots of nutrition in them. So some of them include tomato soup ice cream, prawn cocktail ice cream, duck salad, an orange zest. There is also a pilot program, so it's in some NHS hospitals, and it's called Nice Cream, which is a protein enhanced ice cream that's been developed by Nottingham University, which they've actually fed to real patients, and apparently it's helped them lots. So
I mean, that is clever. It's the same thing as feeding a baby, right? Like, you have to conceal loads of good stuff in ultimately plain palatable stuff. And this is kind of the reverse for older people, but just using ice cream.
Yeah. So is it true, Rosie? I've heard on television and in commercials, they actually use mashed potato to film instead of ice cream.
It is true. That is actually 100% true. You can use various different things. Mashed potato is a really popular one. And when I say mashed potato, I don't mean like beautifully handmade mashed potato. I mean like
smash,
really the
instant
most mash. Emulsified, stabilized product you can get. And you would just dye it with whatever colors it's supposed to look like, because it makes those really perfect fluffy scoops.
Yeah.
And it obviously holds.
It doesn't melt.
It doesn't melt. The other option you can use is shelf-stable vegetable shortening. So like Trex is the well-known brand, and that whipped up with a bit of sugar also makes beautiful ice cream, and it's better for a soft serve effect.
Okay. Okay, that's it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod, one word.
And if you would like to get in touch and send us your own facts, recipes, and any questions, please do email us at lunchbox@qi.com.
Rosie, have you got any ice cream recipes in your cookbook?
In my cookbook, Good Time Cooking, I have one ice cream recipe. No, that's a lie. I have two. I have a semifreddo. It's a salted honey semifreddo. It's delicious. Oh, it's one of my favorite puddings I've ever made. And the other one I have in there is actually an ice cream sundae made with peanut butter and chili oil.
Wow.
Because I don't know if you've ever tried chili oil in ice cream, but it's phenomenal. Goodness. And I really recommend you doing it. Manu, could I ask a favour? Because I would really like to make your bread ice cream.
Yeah.
Please could you post a recipe on socials?
Of course, we'll whack it up.
Yeah.
And I want to say a big thank you for all of the listens thus far. We are so excited about it. If you're enjoying the pod, please do leave us a review or give us some stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening from. It would be really helpful.
It does make a difference. So we'll leave you with this. There is a word in Icelandic specifically for going out for a drive to get ice cream. It's called Ísbíltúr, literally an ice cream road trip.
That sounds like a Lord of the Rings character.
Ísbíltúr, no. And so, see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Manu Henriot, Rosie McKean, and me, Jack Chambers. It was mixed by Liang Lee and produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.
Any team that's tested AI tools for data has seen the pattern already. AI gives a different number than your BI tool. Metrics don't match across teams. And inevitably, users lose trust. It turns out, turning on AI is easy, but making it work on data is not. Hex AI was built to solve this. The key is nailing context. Hex is built to unify and curate your data context for agents. Data teams can observe, govern, and continuously improve every AI answer, so answers get smarter the more your team asks. The result? Your entire organization asks data questions in natural language and trusts the answers. Not because the AI got lucky, because it knows your business and its data. Because that's what an AI analytics platform should do. Join data teams from Cursor, Lovable, Ramp, AWS, and over 2,000 more at hex.ai.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age-appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.